Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Larry Kay, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Chicago. Today is Tuesday, May 28th, 2024, and today we're reading from the Big Book. We're currently on, we're in the chapter, There Is a Solution. We are on page 22, the first paragraph, which begins, "This is by no means," and it ends with, "Should identify him roughly." Just going to comment on the one paragraph this morning. Today's readers, we have Diane M. on the 12 steps. We have Karen W. on the 12 traditions. And the readers of the text, we have Elena C., Nancy P., and Rena L. Let me give you the share ID for yesterday, the share IDs rather. Yesterday, May 27th, the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, that number is 21,433. That's 21433. The 10 a.m. meeting yesterday, 21,434, 21434. The OA preamble, Overeaters Anonymous, is a fellowship of individuals who through shared experience, strength, and hope are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. We don't solicit or accept outside donations. We're not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. And we take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors. And we carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. We have a sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states that each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating, they can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. So I will now ask Diane M. to please read the 12 steps. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning. This is Diane M. from Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts, compulsive overeater in recovery. So one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Pass.
Thanks, Diane. Okay, now with the 12 traditions, we have Karen W. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning. Thank you for your service. I'm Karen W., compulsive overeater in Katy, Texas. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for allowing me to be of service, and I pass.
Karen, thanks so much for being of service. So here's how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery that's described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then we stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature that we're discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes, and I'll time you. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, for readers it's 6 months, and there is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read, and we are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. If you'd like to share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. So today we're back in the Big Book. We are in the chapter, There Is a Solution. We're on page 22. The first paragraph, it begins, this is by no means. Through one paragraph ending, should identify him roughly. And I'm now going to ask Elena C. to get us started. Elena, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Good morning, everyone. This is by no means a comprehensive picture of true alcoholic, as our behavior patterns vary. But this description should identify him roughly. So my name is Elena C. from South Carolina, and I just thought first, what am I going to say? Such a short paragraph. But yet, it has a lot of meaning as I read it again. So it talks about not necessarily how we drink or eat and how much and what. It talks about what we do, what we do. And if we look at the paragraph before, you know, the drinker, the moderate, the hard drinker, there isn't as much of a behavior described there. But there's plenty, plenty about the true alcoholic. And so, you know, we are different. So I know for me, the resentments were running the show, you know, the fears were running, was running the show in my life. And under each resentment, there was a fear. And no pill in this world does as much to my resentment and fear as God, you know, like, it just blows my mind how it wasn't not necessarily that I had to stop eating my triggering foods, but to kind of use God, use the steps to work on my character defect, you know, and somehow it was a discontinuation of my being, like, and what I mean by that is, you know, I just had this thought, I had this feeling, and then they went away rapidly to be, to other thoughts and feelings would come that triggered behaviors. And I'm like, what the hell, you know? And I really think that other people are doing that too. And there were other people who did other things that were unbelievable and created havoc in relationships. And so, you know, and it's not anymore. There is no discontinuation, very little of my being. There is an integration of all of my thoughts, feelings, you know, who I am. It's kind of a narrative. I'm a narrative. I used to be, you know, words, like somebody stutters. And you know, it's true. It happens for addicts. It happens for addicts, you know. Resentment, dishonesty, fear, selfishness, all these take over, and they are extreme, and that's what it is. That's the description right there. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you for letting me share.
Elena, thanks so much for getting us started. Elena read from page 22, the first paragraph. This is by no means. And we're just going to comment on the one paragraph. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day to allow others to jump in as well. So if you care to share, please give me your first name and last initial. Who would like to share and what was read?
Shanna C.
Katie
Shanna.
C. from Boston.
Katie.
Lauren Grace B., New Jersey.
Becky K.
Becky. Who else? I heard Shanna, Katie, I think it was Dawn Grace, and Becky K. Anybody else? Okay, let's get started with Shanna C. followed by Katie G. Shanna, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much, Larry, for your service and all who are on the meeting who are of service. You know, this short little paragraph says so much for me. I'm Shanna C., a grateful recovered compulsive overeater from Tennessee, and it's a miracle for my life. But this paragraph talks about how, you know, this is not a, by no means, a comprehensive picture of the true alcoholic compulsive overeater, as our behavior patterns vary. So it's saying from the get-go that we're all going to have different behavior patterns. And my tendency, especially when I, you know, when I'm unaware of the reality and what compulsive overeating actually is, you know, I have all kinds of ideas of what that looks like in my head. And it, and, you know, and a lot of times those ideas change based on my own emotions because I'm unaware that I'm unable to control my emotional nature. And so I'm constantly either raising the bar or lowering the bar because I don't want to be here, left to my own devices. You know, that craziness that, you know, I want so badly to fit in, and my excuse for not living life is I don't feel good, like I fit in and I'm not good enough, yet the very thing in me tries to disqualify me for anything good that is being presented to me. And that's what, you know, I'm unaware of. But anyway, aside from that, understanding what compulsive overeating is, at least for me, I didn't necessarily have to eat the huge amount of quantities that some have had. I didn't have to necessarily display all the behaviors that other compulsive overeaters have had. The problem is once I start eating certain ingredients, I can't stop. And if that is a common denominator. There have been times where I have been brutally picked on and I've experienced abuse. There have been times in my life where I've had nothing but accolades and nothing but loving support. And nothing, I mean, you know, I have felt extremely, extremely ugly. I've felt extremely, extremely beautiful, but I've been none of that has actually been what has caused me to be bodily and mentally different from my fellows. Once I start eating certain ingredients, for me, I can't stop, and I can't stop starting, and I can't stop thinking about how I'm going to manage and control it better next time. And that's what makes me the compulsive overeater, and that's what makes me a true person who needs a power greater than me and a new way to live in order to survive this thing, because it is lethal for me in every way, shape, form, or fashion, mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally. It is lethal. And grateful that this spiritual mode of living is amazing health restorative. I feel better than I've ever felt in my entire life, and I owe it all to this program and the power given to me through these 12 steps, and hopefully I can maintain some humility today and go help someone. That's it. Thanks for listening, and I hope you guys have a wonderful, wonderful day.
Thanks, Shanna. You too. Next up, we have Katie G., followed by, I believe it was Dawn Grace. Katie, good morning to you.
Larry, good morning. Good morning, everyone. Katie G, recovered compulsive eater in Boston. And Overeaters Anonymous, I didn't want to join Overeaters Anonymous. I thought that it was a group of really fat people coming together. And the problem with me is that I like drama. So I really thought that to be a compulsive eater, I had to have high extremes of my behavior, the physical manifestation. So I thought I wouldn't belong unless I could say I've been 100 pounds heavier, which I have. I thought I wouldn't belong if I hadn't been 17 pounds lighter, which I have. And the physical manifestation of all of this, it can be very seductive to get into the, oh, well, they're fat, so therefore, oh, well, they're thin, so therefore. But our description should identify him roughly. And right now we're in the chapter, there is a solution. So we're trying to figure out, like, if I need a solution, I need to know what the problem is. And there's a group of big book people that study, and they ask you to list all the insane things you've ever done with food. And then they say, actually, no, the most insane thing I have ever done is something that everybody, I think, unless you're just here for fun, can relate to, which is picking up the food in a state of entire abstinence. If I am sane, if I have power, choice, and control, then it is not likely that I'm going to pick up the food with all of the information that I have and all of the research and development that I've done. I'm not going to go back to the scale. I'm not going to go back to the laxatives. But I do. And so, you know, as our first speaker beautifully shared, the main problem of this is in my mind, right? And once I start eating, I cannot stop. I have that physical allergy, but the mind is what drives me back each and every time. Step two says, came to believe that a power greater than me can restore me to sanity. Well, the implication there is that I'm insane, and I am. I really am, and I don't say that lightly, and I don't say that comically. You have to be clinically insane to do the things that I have done in my life, right? But lack of power, that's my dilemma, and that's what this big book is going to show me. And if I lack power, if I have no power, no choice, and no control around the food, a lot of people say they're having problems with God, but if I lack power, if I truly surrender to step one, I lack power, then there has to be a power greater than me that can restore me to sanity. So I'll just wrap with this. I'm just so grateful today that I have a power greater than me that restores me to sanity in thought, word, and action. And I'm grateful to do this with all of you. And with that, I pass.
Thanks, Katie. Hey, Lauren Grace, you know what? The bad news is I have the ears and the hearing of a 58-year-old, but Leia M. has the ears of a 20-year-old. So you're not Dawn, you're Lauren. Lauren Grace, you're up next. Good morning.
Good morning. And I'm 61 and I don't have good ears either, so you're right in the club. So thank you. I'm Lauren Grace B., a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater from South Jersey. And I love this paragraph because I was a person who came in, I guess you could say, with a high bottom. I wasn't, if you looked at me on the street, you know, you wouldn't say, oh my gosh, she's got a problem with food. But my problem was I couldn't stop eating. I'd always had 15 pounds up, down, up, down, up, down. I got over the 15 pounds up and I could not stop eating and I was scared to death. So that's the definition of a compulsive overeater, not how many pounds overweight you are. And from the outside, my life looked fine. It wasn't destroying my life. I hadn't lost jobs. I had a young family, two kids at the time, and our life looked fine from the outside. And I just wanted to share with the newcomers, you know, you're hearing these stories sometimes of people doing extreme things for food. That doesn't mean that you don't belong. We belong when we can't stop engaging in our inappropriate behaviors with food, or our mind is obsessed with food and we can't get things out of our head. And I still did crazy things about food. Like I would drive miles and miles out of my way. I used to do home health and I would drive miles out of my way just to get a certain sugar-free, fat-free froyo, you know, so I wasn't rational. But I couldn't stop eating, and people think my program is too extreme, you know, because I've never been 100 pounds overweight, and people see what I do with my food and the time I spend on meetings, and they think it's too extreme, but they don't know the truth. And people are appreciating the changes that are happening in my mind. I used to be such a control freak, and of course I'm not perfect. That's still my default mode, but the program is helping me so much with the way I think and the way I live. So I just wanted to encourage anyone who's new and not necessarily related to stories of extremes that you belong here. If you are obsessed with food or body image, or you can't stop eating even though your weight is manageable, I just wanted to let you know there's others like you out here. And I will pass with that. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Lauren Grace. Okay, next up we have Becky Kay, and then we'll take some more names. Becky, good morning.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Becky Kay, grateful, recovering, compulsive overeater from Maryland. So grateful for everyone here today. And I tell you, this paragraph reminds me of what I used to be and how I really don't want to ever go back. It says here, as our behavior patterns vary. Yeah, our behavior patterns vary among each other, but also they varied with myself. And I am so grateful for this program. I'm now I've been with program 16 years, and through the grace of God and every, you know, stringing one day at a time along, I have 14 years of abstinence. But this paragraph reminds me of where I was when I was deep into the food. I truly was a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde personality. I went from, as the big book says, restless, irritable, and discontent to sometimes euphoric, happy. I was, as the previous paragraph says, completely antisocial, but the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde roller coaster, I'd go to being the life of the party. I went from starving myself, you know, to binging my brains out, binging on everything in sight. I would be kind and loving one moment and literally, like a Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, flip the switch to this raging, angry lunatic that literally threw things, you know, across the room. And like the paragraph says before, you know, he went to doctor to get morphine or some sedative to taper his nerves off. You know, I also went to the doctor and said, you know, give me something so I could, you know, hopefully lose weight. And, you know, I was on pills too. You know, here, plus, by the way, this will also calm your nerves, right? And what this paragraph reminds me is that this is how I was. Never want to go back there. And this reminds me to work program each and every day, because as the big books are on, we only have a daily reprieve from this deadly disease based on our fit spiritual condition. And as other people have mentioned, you know, what does it take for that fit spiritual condition? Well, we have to remember that we have the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind, and that we need a higher power to help us. So for those of you on the line, you know, please keep coming back. This program works only if you work it. And I am so grateful that I can remember who I was in these paragraphs, and also to hold on dearly to working the steps each and every day so I can be that more balanced person and live a life, as the big book says, that's truly happy, joyous, and free, I believe that is the word. So thank you for letting me share.
Oh, thanks, Becky. Okay, just to let you know where we are before we take more names, we're on page 22 in the chapter, There is a Solution. The first full paragraph, it's a short one. This is by no means a comprehensive picture of the true alcoholic. as our behavior patterns vary, but this description should identify him roughly. So who would like to share what was read?
Lisa B.
Lisa B.
Bonnie B.
Don't be shy. Bonnie, don't be shy, right?
Shanista
and Bonnie.
And?
Shanista.
Stephanie
Who
R.
Stephanie, gotcha.
Jennifer C.
Boy, you guys are being really kind. Jennifer C. Anybody else? Okay. So we have Lisa, Bonnie, Shanista, Stephanie, and Jennifer. We got a powerhouse of women here. Boom, boom, boom. Lisa, you're up, followed by Bonnie. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning. My name is Lisa B., compulsive overeater from Michigan. Thank you for your service, everybody. I could so relate to that short little paragraph that says, I was identifying in with behavior patterns vary. because I, too, was a high-bottom eater. And because of that, it kept me for a long time in denial about whether I had the disease or not. But the behaviors, when I kept seeing the insanity of my behaviors and everything, then I was able to identify in. Because I didn't have the extremes either. But God brought it to my attention that if I continued or went back to the food, I can and will get there with the extremes and everything. And I don't want to go. Others have done the research for me, so I don't have to do it. I've had enough. I don't want any more. And I'm so grateful that finally was brought to my attention and I was able to get abstinent and stay that way. I think that's all I have. Thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Oh, I'm so glad you did, Lisa. Thanks so much. We have Bonnie B. followed by Shanista. Bonnie, good morning.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for your service, Larry. Bonnie B. Living in the state of Florida, gratefully recovered by the grace of God for today. Yeah, you know, this is a leaning in thing for me. When I came into program, I knew deep down that I was different. When I listened to other people's stories and I talked with other people, it maybe wasn't exactly the same, but man, there were similarities, right? So this is by no means a comprehensive picture. I think for me, again, what it came down to was yes, 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 and maybe no to this or this, but overall, yes, this is how I showed up. This is what I did. These were the patterns that presented themselves on a daily or weekly basis. Sometimes I could hold them underwater for a short time, but then they would sort of explode and I'd sort of throw up on people around me and they'd wonder what happened. But this is what drew me in. I didn't have to have the entire list. It didn't have to be all of it, but boy, there was enough. There were so many things that were so similar to other people that I knew this was definitely my DNA. Not that I wanted to accept it initially, but on page 31, you know, the program is so beautiful. The bomb that says we don't like to pronounce any individual as an alcoholic. We get to figure it out ourselves. I figured it out myself by continuing to try something different. But for anyone that's on the outside that's listening today and wondering, you know, am I, stick around. Talk to enough people. There's patterns. And we all, if we have this DNA, we have the same pattern. It's not good and it's not bad. It's how it presents itself. And it's the gift. The gift is for me coming to that place in and of myself where I realize I do have a different DNA and I do need something different than I've used in the past. And I have access to that. You know, it's God and the big book, you know, pushes us back to God every single time. And if I'm willing to lean in, I will have what everyone else has, which is freedom from the obsession and from the compulsive behaviors for today. And I also am grateful beyond words. So I think I'll pass at that. Thanks, everyone. Have a blessed day.
Oh, you too, Bonnie. Thanks so much. Okay, next up we have Shanista, followed by Stephanie. Shanista. I like saying your name, Shanista.
Good morning. Shanista in Texas. Okay, yeah. So the behaviors describe us roughly, and coming into the rooms was the first time where I heard people say out loud the things that I had been thinking in my head or the things that I was doing and hiding. One of my character defects is comparison. So I was spending, you know, a bunch of time in meetings comparing how we were similar, how we were different, who was worse than or less than, et cetera, et cetera. But those morsels of identification that could put as close to words as possible the inexplicable things in my mind is what helped solidify the concept of me, acceptance, that I was powerless over food, over my compulsive eating behaviors, that there was nothing else out in the world that I was going to be able to do in order to be recovered from my addiction, or, you know, one day at a time and all that business. So identifying in the meetings made it possible. Also going through the steps with the sponsor and reading the big book, and when it gets into how it works and that whole paragraph about selfishness and self-centeredness. Now that was the real deep dark secrets that I kept inside, that I was gracious and kind and loving and modest, but all because I wanted to get what I wanted. And that inside was this ego, controlling, all, like, those were the deepest, darkest secrets I had never shared. And the book put them out in front of me, and people sharing put them out in front of me, where I couldn't hide anymore for myself. And I'm just grateful, like everybody else, I'm grateful that, you know, the truth was laid out so plainly in front of me, so that I could see who I really was, and that there is a solution for me. It's not that I'm inherently flawed. I'm human, and this just happens to be the details of my humanness. And working this program allows me to live a new life and change parts of my humanness so that I can be of service to others and hopefully do God's will for today. And with that, I'll pass.
Thanks so much, Anista. Okay, we have Stephanie R., followed by Jennifer C. Stephanie, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Larry. Good morning, family. Stephanie R. from Missouri. I have, again, so much gratitude for this program because I was able to be extremely social with friends yesterday, and I can remember in the past when I was in the food, I would just, first of all, put on 15 different outfits to make sure, you know, I didn't look too fat or whatever. And then I would be obsessing about what they were going to bring to have to eat. And the gratitude and the grace and the miracle of this program was that I was able to get up, go to a meeting, and really become centered with God and go and be with friends and be my authentic self. And that's such a gift for me. I know in the past I would have probably just sat in the back and listened to other people talking because I was afraid that I would say something that would offend someone or would make me seem like not part of the group. But it was just such a joy, and it was just the gift of this program because I am a person who, when I was in the food, just truly didn't know how to be me and was uncomfortable in my own skin. And the way I identify in too is that my behavior with food was I just thought about it nonstop, and to the point that I often wouldn't go to social gatherings because I was so focused on the food. So I just have a lot of gratitude. I just express that so much when I get on the line because that's just how I feel today. Just so grateful that I can be a part of a program that has given me the serenity to be a part of life. And I'm really glad to be here. And with that, I'll pass.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here too, Stephanie. Hey, Jennifer, before we go, let me just tell people, because after Jennifer, we're going to take more names. We're on page 22, the first full paragraph. This is by no means a comprehensive picture. So with that, let me hand this over to Jennifer C. Good morning, Jennifer.
Hey, Larry, good morning. Thank you so much for your service. Jennifer C. recovered in Greenville, South Carolina. You know, I was thinking about just the paragraph before this paragraph that just really describes the progressive nature of this illness. Things just get worse and worse and worse over time. And it brings me back to the promises that are laid out in the doctor's opinion for the addict who, you know, even though he knows it's injurious, right? I shouldn't do it. I shouldn't pick up. I shouldn't go back to the very thing I just swore off. After a while, I can't differentiate between the true and false, right? It gets foggy. It gets really, really foggy. And I try to talk myself out of it. And I try to come up with the list of reasons that I shouldn't go back to it. Oh my gosh, you know, all the reasons that I should get out of the house, go do something else. And I play that game and I get in the wrestling ring with the monster, with the disease. And I try to win this time, right? With the mental gymnastics that I do. And I get restless and I get irritable and I get discontented until I can again get that sense of ease and comfort that comes at once. It's a promise, right? I'm going to get it at once. Ah, my shoulders are going to lighten and everything's just going to feel so much lighter. I'm not going to have to fight the beast anymore. I'm just going to be able to relax and give in and eat all the food that I want to eat. Sounds glorious, right? And after I succumb to that desire, the phenomenon of craving comes in and beats me to a pulp. I can't stop, right? It takes me further than I want to go, and it makes me stay way longer than I want to stay. And now I'm in a spree. And another promise of every spree is that I'm always going to emerge remorseful. I'm always going to wish that I didn't pick up. I'm always going to remember that it's easier to stay abstinent than it is to get abstinent, right? So I'm going to make a firm resolution again, and I'm going to say, that's it. I'm all done. And this is going to be repeated over and over and over and over and over again until I can experience what they call an entire psychic change. It's going to be a change in my soul. It's going to be a change in my soul where I no longer have to fight that first compulsive bite. And God saves me from it over and over and over again. God just saves me from it, protects me from it. And this is possible. This is more than possible as I turn my attention away from the first compulsive bite, away from, am I going to eat today? Am I not going to eat today? And I pour myself into this work. And I just want to say, you know, you have not because you ask not. And my encouragement to those that are in the food today and they're saying, oh, I need that psychic change, but I'm not getting it. I'm not getting it. You know, I started to ask for it. I started to realize God has what I need. If I need a psychic change, I need to go to God and I need to start asking for it. So just keep praying, keep asking, keep doing the work, keep doing what you're told. And the promises of the disease begin to change into the promises of recovery. Thank you all for being here with me this morning. And with that, I pass.
Thanks, Jennifer. Okay, again, page 22, the first full paragraph. And who else would like to share what was read?
Hi, Lindsay P. from New York.
Lindsay, I heard Pete.
Lindsay, yeah, thank you.
I got you, Lindsay. And Pete, who else? Maybe a couple more?
Toby.
Got you, Toby. How about one more? All right, we'll go. I heard Lindsay, Pete, and Toby. Lindsay, let's get started. Good morning.
Hi, Lindsay P. from New York. This short paragraph to me just says so much. My behaviors were out of control when I came to OA, and they were out of control concerning the food, but they were like, you know, times a trillion concerning my other morally corrupt behaviors. I thought when I came into program that I just needed to get a hold of the food. And if I could get a hold of the food and I could not act out with the food, that I could get the rest of my life in order. And then I found out that my life was totally unmanageable and I didn't even recognize it. It didn't matter that I was having an affair on my husband, that I was feeling just for the sake of feeling, that I was lying uncontrollably, and that I was living, you know, just a completely morally incorrect life. I thought food was the problem. So as I progressed through the steps and realized that food was absolutely a problem, but food was more of the solution to my problem, which was my spiritual malady. And I desperately needed to have a spiritual or psychic change. And that only came through my own behaviors of going through the steps rigorously, cleaning house, being willing, and most importantly, turning to my higher power. And with that, I've been able to, thank God, not, you know, get the food under control, which is great, but also look to my character defects and realize that I was living life in such an unhealthy way, and I could wake up and not feel guilt and shame anymore. And that is a true miracle of the program. I thought if I could get my food down, that would be the miracle. I completely thought my weight and my food was what needed to change. But what I realized is this was an inside to outside job, and I desperately needed to change so that I didn't have to live in guilt and shame and remorse and hiding, constantly seeking validation from others, having, you know, desperate image management. That was my life, and I no longer need to do that. And I could take a deep breath, and that is a miracle. So just really quick, when it says that this is by no means a comprehensive picture, like there's no way I could have gotten a comprehensive picture of just how off the charts I was behaving. And so I really appreciate this tiny little paragraph because, you know, not everyone cheats on their husband. Not everyone steals. So it's just like a reminder that we all have different behaviors. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Hey, Lindsay, thanks so much. Okay, next up we have Pete followed by Toby. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks for taking the meeting. My name is Pete B. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm recovered today by God's grace and mercy in Pennsylvania. And, you know, I've been listening to A Vision for You for about 10 years. And, you know, the thing that originally drew me in was the in-depth analysis of the words, of the sentences, of the paragraphs, of the pages. I mean, I've heard people break down the origin of a word, and it changed my entire, like, comprehension of the language and the wording that's in the big book. And, you know, it's so attractive to me because I guess I don't have a lot of things to think about, but I think about this shit a lot of the times, right? And, you know, in there is a solution. Actually, across this entire book, it actually tells us, we talk so much about powerlessness, that we don't have power, that we're never going to have power. And, you know, in this chapter, it tells us when we lose power, right? It says exactly when we lose power, and it says it multiple times. When I lose power is when I put the substance in my system. Right? The change occurs in me once I start to drink. As a matter of fact, across the entire book and the AA 12 and 12, it never even says we are powerless. It says we were powerless. It says that lack of power was our dilemma, which means it's in past tense. Now, what? Granted, we do, because of this drinking, we do become essentially insane. It was mentioned earlier. The most insane thing that I've ever done was go back to the substance after knowing full well that I have an allergic reaction to it. I'm powerless over the certain foods, certain ingredients, certain substances, just like a person that has an allergy to strawberries is. And then my thinking becomes so delusional, an act of providence will straighten it out.
but it does produce a psychic change. I get, the book tells me in several places that I have power. It actually tells me that I'll be an agent, which means I've been empowered. That power comes from God. It tells me that I'll have the power to help others. Here's my favorite one. It tells me that I have sex powers. Yeah, that's a good one. Right, so there, we don't remain hopeless and helpless. Sanity gets restored, and it gets restored by tapping into the power, the one that has all power, and then our mental faculties get returned. Right? If we're going to analyze what it says and we're going to share about what it says, we shouldn't be afraid. Just, yeah, I was powerless. I was powerless and helpless over this condition. But as a result of working the steps, aligning my will with God's, sanity has been returned. I know what I am. I know what I have. And I know what I have to do in order to not engage the phenomenon of craving. I have to be 100% entirely abstinent and have a psychic change as a result of working the steps. So I went over time, and with that, I'll pass. Thanks for letting me share.
That's okay, Pete. Okay, next up we have Toby W. Good morning, Toby.
Good morning, Larry. Toby W., recovered in the Boston suburb. You know, it's important for me to remember where I came from. I need to not relive it, but remember what it was like. And I never thought that my eating affected anybody else. But now that I'm recovered, I'm hearing from my adult children things that they did that I have no recollection of, that either I wasn't there, or if I was there, I was into the food, and I wasn't physically, I was physically there, but not emotionally or mentally or psychologically or any other way of being there. And it's important for me to remember that I was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and people didn't know what they were going to get. It's important to remember that as far as Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, that the behaviors that I had changed. And I used to say, I'm also a Gemini, so I used to say, if you don't like me, wait a minute, because that's how I change. And it wasn't just the Gemini, it was the food. Being in a food stupor and not remembering where you are, it's like an alcoholic being drunk. I talk about my foods as my alcoholic foods, and I say I chew my booze. And that is the reason why I need to remember, so that I can remain recovered a day at a time. And it's a miracle that I am, since I've been in since 1978. And this is the first time that I have food freedom. And I'm so grateful to my higher power, who I call God, that I don't understand, but I know is helping me and restoring me to sanity, because I was insane in the way I ate. And I am so grateful. And thank you, Larry, for allowing me to do some service. And I pass.
Oh, thank you, Toby. Okay, we have time for maybe a couple more shares. Who wants to jump in? We can meditate for like 6 minutes.
happy to do that too.
Annette F. in Florida.
Annette? Anybody else want to share time with Annette?
Colleen M. from Maryland.
Okay,
Felicia,
let's
D.
go with Annette. Yeah. Thank you, guys. Let's go with 2.5 minutes each for Annette and then Colleen. And if you are not Annette, if you would be kind enough to mute your phone, that would be lovely. Annette, good morning.
Larry. Oh, yes. This is Annette F. I'm in Florida. I am a compulsive eater with all the wonderful traits that come with that. Over the years, I would say, I have to drop a few pounds, and people would say, no, you don't. That's the worst thing in the world you can say to me. I'm not sure if they said, oh, my God, yes. But so I lived under the illusion of I'm okay. I mean, I had years of wonderful abstinence, and when I came into this program, it was the most wonderful diet in the world. I mean, I was free. I was free of food. This is what I could eat. But I didn't know anything about the big book. they didn't share that information. It took maybe 10 years before I got introduced to the big book. And when that happened, when I was introduced to these 12 steps, and really introduced to these 12 steps, it changed my life. I went from terrified to, I don't know if confident would be the words, but I did things for myself and my children, because by now I was a single parent, that I would never have dreamed I could do because of my insecurities before that. But I trusted God, and God showed up. These 12 steps introduced me to a God that loves me. And, I wake up every morning now with the appreciation of who God is in my life. And I thank him for everything. Like, I woke up at 5:30. I'm not ready to be vertical. So I laid back down. Well, I woke up at 7:05, which was in time for this meeting. But the first thing I said was, oh, thank you, God. I got to have a little bit more sleep. I mean, God is everywhere. Now I am in a difficult situation because I take care of a sick husband. And I probably use that more than I should for not having my perfect life. But I also know that whatever's supposed to happen, happens, period. And acceptance truly is the answer in my life. This we're doing it your way today. And I will go with that. And that's how I can survive one day at a time, because having a sick husband is absolutely not easy. And yesterday, I had 2 days ago, of day that I just wanted to eat. I wanted to eat everything. I mean, I just thought about all the things I could eat instead of making
phone calls. Moderator, please unmute.
So if that was my hint that the 2.5 minutes is up, I will pass. But I didn't eat. I made a phone call. And that phone call understood exactly, because it was a person in OA who is who we have to reach out to when we are in distress. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thanks, Annette. Hey, Colleen, we got about a minute or so. Good morning to you.
Hey, good morning. Thank you, Larry. Thanks for everybody's doing service, and that's plenty of time for me. I just wanted to claim my seat and just, I love what I heard this morning about, we have power now. I mean, I have some power today. I was this insanely drunken person with food, did insane stuff, got tight at just exactly the wrong moment. And, by the grace of God, when I was able to listen to others and put the food down and start working this program and getting a relationship with my higher power, I have
some protection against that first bite. And, you know, God, I've got a lot of other character defects to work on. God continues to reveal to me things that I need to do to grow in his likeness. And, you know, today I'm a vessel for my higher power. It is not about, you know, what Colleen's show. But on the days that I'm, you know, that I get up and do the next right thing, which I try to do on a daily basis. So I'm just so grateful that after reading the last paragraph compared to this paragraph, the first thing I had to do was concede to my innermost self that I was truly an alcoholic. And that took a lot of years. But I know that if I hadn't been able to do that, I wouldn't be willing to do what I have to do today to stay spiritually fit. So thanks for all of you who are walking this journey with me. Have a great day.
Thanks for wrapping us up there, Colleen. And thank you to everyone who's participated today. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study that will immediately follow our closing. Let me give you the share ID for today's meeting. That number is 21,436. That's 21436. So we will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, and then we'll follow that up with a serenity prayer. And Nancy P., will you read that for us? Good morning.
I will, yes. Nancy P., recovered in West Newton, Massachusetts. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you can't you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.